and his family. On March 9, 1971, the teacher starts his new work. Beheshti prepares the entirety of the lesson, and Bahonar and Golzadeh are in charge of preparing the content. At times, they ask Mr. Motahiri for help. The prepared content gets its final approval by the group, and in the end, they give samples of the book to nearly 1,000 people so they could read them and give them their opinions, from university professors to students. The doctor does the job perfectly and with high quality. He even becomes adamant that the photos in the book are in color. The doctor believes the students must definitely see the red flag of Imam Hussein. Slowly, the books reach the students, not only millions of secondary and high school students across the country, but also their teachers become familiar with a new view and outlook of Islam. Later on, authors of the group hold seminars for teachers in different cities. Beheshti himself teaches the entire book to the teachers once. During these sessions, he's sensitive to know how religion teachers react while reading the textbook, what their opinion and criticism of the textbook is. What he does causes the training of a large number of educated individuals of this influential class. Beheshti says, "We were always worried, not out of fear that they'd arrest us and put us in prison or things like that. We were never scared of these things. We were worried that the work we were doing would be left unfinished. With God's help and relying on a well-planned method, we were successful in preparing the last of the books. Exactly after we'd sent that last book for publication, the hellish organization of the Shah found out what we'd done." On April 1, 1974, Savak writes in one of his documents, "Beheshti's employment and sensitive but secondary positions of the Ministry of Education is not favorable because of his past political activities." This happens exactly a few days after the female minister's appreciation of Mr. Beheshti for his total seriousness and interest in Iran's school books organization. But it's too late. The books have been published, and millions of students across the country have access to them. Savak asks the Ministry of Education for explanations a number of times. But the revolutionary voices of protest can now be heard from every corner of the country. The years from 1970 to 1976 are six influential years of the presence of the teacher in the systemization of the minds of the students of Iran. Dr. Sayyid Mohammad Hosseini Beheshti, born in Isfahan, a student of Qom's Seminary School and a graduate of University of Tehran, known back then as Maqul and Mangul College, a talented genius and a revolutionary fighter, a cleric who's a teacher who started his struggle against Taghut from small classrooms in a school in Qom, and with effort and hard work, made it to the highest positions of influence in the Ministry of Education. And in the end, he was able to train a generation whose freedom-seeking and fighting injustice spirit was heard by the entire world, the huge revolution in Iran. Thank you.
ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره، همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام إن لله في كل نعمة حقا فمن أداه زاده منها ومن قصر فيه خاطر بزوال نعمته.
Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam said, "Surely in every blessing there is the right of Allah. If one discharges that right, Allah increases the blessing. And if one falls short of doing so, one stands in danger of losing the blessing."
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program is To My Brother, and we are discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. Dear friends, in the various programs that we have had regarding the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam, we have learned that Imam Ali's life included and was very much involved in knowledge. Of course, Islam is the religion of knowledge, Quran is the religion of knowledge, and the Almighty Allah is the source of knowledge. And so likewise, the Holy Prophet taught us knowledge. He was the completion of human knowledge. Now, of course, as Imam Ali alayhi salam is the living miracle of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household, Imam Ali being the living miracle, we see that the Holy Prophet taught Imam Ali
all this kind of vast ocean of knowledge. But Imam Ali alayhi salam says something very interesting. He says that knowledge is belief which is acted upon. It is so interesting, dear friends, and sometimes it is actually rather unfortunate. And at one point or the other, we are all victims to this mishap or this flaw, if you want to call it. And what flaw is that, dear friends? That flaw is that we do not act upon the knowledge that we have. It is really interesting, but Ayatollah Taqi Behjat said that if you act upon what you know, Allah will teach you what you do not know. And so here we find that Amir al-Mu'mineen, the first divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ali alayhi salam, the commander of the faithful, tells us that knowledge, true knowledge, is belief which is acted upon. If we do not act upon what we know, we will move farther and farther away from the path of truth and justice. And if we act upon what we know, we will continue to walk the path of truth and justice. But we must hope and pray, and we must request Allah the Almighty, that if for some reason we are not able to fully act upon our knowledge, may Allah help us and endow us with the power and the strength and the courage and the determination to act upon what we know. And if, by the grace and favor of the Almighty Allah, we do act upon what we know, we pray to Allah that may Allah help us to always remain steadfast and to help us always act upon what we know. A very profound lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRab English Radio, the program To My Brother. I'm Atta, the producer of this program, and at this moment, I invite you to listen to the Arabic text of Ziyara Aminullah along with the English translation. Please stay tuned.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم فاجعل نفسي مطمئنة بقدرك راضية بقضائك.
O Allah, let me be happy and satisfied with that which Thou considers good for me. Let me agree with that which Thou decides for me. Let me passionately remember Thee and invoke Thee. Let me be in love with Thy pure and sincere friends. Let me be well-liked and respected on the earth and in the heavens. Let me be unruffled and well-composed in the midst of misfortunes. Let me be gratefully thankful in prosperity. Let me be mindful of much and more bounties. Let me ardently desire for the heart-warming meeting with Thee, well-equipped with piety to gain my end on the day of requital. Let me follow into the footsteps of Thy representatives. Let me disassociate myself from the mannerism of Thy enemies. Let me pass my time in this world by praising and glorifying Thee.
تبقى عيني بدمع مشتاقيا قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبي ولها ولا راغي
Now let's listen to Brother Muhammad Al-Hilli, who's going to talk about today's topic.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah. He was born inside the place that billions face in prayer. He was martyred in one of the best places of prayer whilst performing prayer. He gave charity in prayer and was praised by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The commander of the faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam, loved his salah. Once he was asked by an individual about the meaning of the actions of prayer. Imam Ali alayhi salam replied, "Your takbir means Allah is above being described." In ruku' after a while he states, "When you extend your neck, it means I'm willing to be beheaded because of my faith." When you raise your head after ruku', you testify that Allah is the one who has brought us into existence, actually hears us. In the first prostration of sujood, you think about how he created us from soil. Then raising the head means Allah is giving us life. And then the second sajda refers to being buried. When we raise our head second time, it refers to being resurrected on the day of Qiyamah, judgment. He continues describing other parts of prayer until he states, "Whomsoever does not comprehend this, their prayers are incomplete." The aftermath. After prayer, sit to reflect and perform some dhikr. Imam Ali alayhi salam recommends this. He says, "If you do so, the angels will keep praying for you and I so long as we're sitting on the prayer mat." In several narrations, Imam Ali alayhi salam recommends, for example, the recitation of Ayatul Kursi after Salah, where he states it helps in the acceptance of the prayer. And of course, it is a means by which we gain protection and blessings from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Number 9, Salah in unity. Once in Kufa, Imam Ali alayhi salam heard about a group of people who live close to the masjid but refuse to pray in congregation. He then said they should attend and take part in Salatul Jama'ah, otherwise let them turn away from us. He would emphasize this prayer of congregation, even between the husband and wife, since narrations tell us it's at least 24 times more rewarding. Number 10, the sweetness of the night. Amir al-Mu'mineen, the commander of the faithful, Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace and blessings be upon him, loved his night prayers. He would famously say, "I have not missed Salatul Layl since I heard the Prophet of Islam, peace be upon him, and his family say, Salatul Layl Noor." He even performed it during the most ferocious night in the Battle of Siffin, known as Laylatul Harir. Once someone who tried to perform Salatul Layl could not, asked Imam Ali why he couldn't. Imam said to him, "It's because the sins are stopping him from the performance of the night prayer." The commander of the faithful therefore advises us to perform night prayer because according to him, it's the health of the body, pleasure of the Lord, and the downpouring of mercy, as well as following the akhlaq of the prophets. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala grant us tawfiq and permission to follow in the footsteps of this great human being.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now. Thank you.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of The Teacher. I'm your host, Muhammad. Please stay tuned. Today, the story of Shahid Ayatollah Sayyid Muhammad Beheshti. Dear listeners, Shahid Ayatollah Sayyid Muhammad Beheshti was born on October 24, 1928 in Isfahan. He very much liked to become an Islamic scholar, and that is exactly what he did. He was able to become a mujtahid after years of study under famous teachers of Qom Seminary as Ayatollah Murtaza Hari Yazdi and Allama Tabatabai. He learned English and began teaching it in one of the high schools of Iran. He obtained his PhD degree in 1959. Because he was very politically active against the Shah's regime, the Shah's intelligence agency, SAVAK, forced him to move to Tehran from Qom. Ayatollah Shahid Beheshti was very much fond of propagating Islam. For this reason, on the advice of Ayatollah Hayri and Ayatollah Milani, he migrated to Hamburg, Germany to become the administrator of a mosque and the Youth Islamic Association in that city. There, he was very active in spreading profound Islamic teachings. Just look at who the revolutionary figures of Imam Khomeini's movement were. A person like Ayatollah Shahid Beheshti was a well-educated and committed scholar and academic who fought for the cause of Islam against the anti-Islamic regime of his time. If it wasn't for the struggles of people such as Shahid Beheshti, Islam would not be as influential in the world as it is now, and this is not an overstatement. It was the likes of these people who guaranteed the success of Islam and Muslims in the world. Ayatollah Beheshti was not the average person. He was a highly knowledgeable Islamic scholar who established religious schools and published many books. Apart from the high knowledge that he had of different sciences, he spoke to the world in different languages, including English. ¶¶
American government couldn't understand the background of Islamic revolution in Iran in many years, and they continue this misunderstanding in the present time too, and I am afraid that they will pay the price.
Welcome back, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program, The Teacher. Shahid Ayatollah Beheshti was one of the greatest influential personalities during the Islamic Revolution of Iran, who played a crucial role in the events before, during, and after the victory of the Islamic Revolution. We talked about some of his cultural, social, and religious activities. He was also a very active political figure, because as you know, Islam is not only the laws of praying, fasting, zakat, and hajj. Rather, Islam is a political religion as well, which demands all Muslims to take part in every social and political event. He was a strong supporter of Imam Khomeini and engaged in a life-or-death struggle against the anti-Islamic regime of Shah and the world powers. Yes, Shah was anti-Islam, and he was being fought by all the supporters of Imam Khomeini. But Shah was the puppet of the Western powers, including the US and its allies. So, anyone who was fighting the Shah's regime and opposing it was in fact fighting the world arrogant powers. Shahid Ayatollah Beheshti would visit Imam Khomeini from time to time when Imam Khomeini was in exile, for example, in Iraq circa 1969 to 1970. It was around that time when Ayatollah Beheshti returned to Iran from Germany. This is when he continued his socio-political-cultural activities in Iran. His struggle against the Shah's regime once again began, and he was arrested and imprisoned several times by Savak. He was such a prudent, wise and far-sighted man that Imam Khomeini trusted him and told him to form the Revolutionary Council in 1978. After the victory of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Beheshti was considered a political and ideological leader in different socio-political arenas.
احترام به آزادی اندیشه و آزادی انتخاب از اصول اسلام است. باید این آزادی ها رو محترم بشماریم.
اگر به راستی Respecting the freedom of thought and freedom of choice is a principle. In Islam, such freedoms must be respected. If you are a true Muslim and act in an offensive manner or become aggressive out of prejudice, then we friendly tell you not do so. Don't do that. It is not a right thing to do. And if others do so in the name of Islam, and they intend to scratch the pure image of Islam by doing so, then you, my friend, help us to stop them. Informing the public is one way to affect people's mind and to stop such acts. By the way, do you prefer to stop such acts always and only by force, power, and weapons, or by directing the ideas and affecting the minds and guiding them? Which one is better? Definitely guidance. Therefore, help in guiding people. Is the role of such free discussions weak in enlightening and guiding people? Thus, by discussions and exchange of opinions in a cooperative manner, on the one hand, and in an enlightening way on the other hand,
we can help to develop recognition of the causes behind this problem and finding possible solutions. And we can thereby succeed in deep recognition of this social pain and finding the ultimate remedy.
شناخت ریشه‌دارتر این درد و یافتن درمان اصلی و یا درمان‌های اصلی موفق شد.
Our website is parstoday.com. Welcome back, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program, The Teacher. We're analyzing the character of Shahid Ayatollah Beheshti, the great revolutionary figure. By reading his biography, we see that this man went through a lot of trouble and made great effort to become a man who was respected by all committed Muslims in Iran and the world. His aim in forming the Islamic Republic Party was to identify and foster political and cultural elites. Ayatollah Beheshti played an important role in writing the Constitution of Iran as the second deputy chairman of the Assembly of Experts. He was a top political figure in Iran and had considerable influence on the political and social developments in Iran. He was even installed on different positions by Imam Khomeini, such as the head of Supreme Court of Iran. He was martyred while delivering a speech in the hall of the Islamic Republic Party on June 28, 1981, by a bomb explosion which was perpetrated by the MKO terrorist organization, which are known as the Hypocrites by Iranians. He, along with 72 of his fellow party members, were martyred in this tragedy. On the martyrdom of Shahid Ayatollah Beheshti, Imam Khomeini sends a passionate message. Let's listen to it.
منم در نوبت خودم به جامعه روحانیت و به مسلمین جهان و به مستضعفین تمام عالم هم تهنیت و هم تسلیت عرض میکنم.
In the first place, I would like to express to the clerical community and the people of Iran and Muslims of the world and the oppressed people of all the world, congratulations and condolences. Condolences because in various fronts, since the beginning of the movement till now, we have lost many of our youth and religious scholars, women and men. And this was a great tragedy and loss for Muslims. Especially this last criminal act which occurred was committed by American hands against those who were working on nothing except for the betterment of the Muslims. From the members of the parliament and from the government officials, ministers who were exceedingly valuable, lawyers who were valuable, and from judicial authority such as Mr. Beheshti. They were all targeted by the enemy ever since the Islamic Republic began to take shape.
و از قوه قضائیه هم مثل آقای بهشتی
زباندار و رهبر جامعه مکتبی اسلام باید تجلی اسلام باشد. این یک اصل طبیعی که الناس علی دین ملوکهم.
A leader's behavior, actions, words and standing positions in an Islamic community must fully manifest an image of Islam. This is a natural principle that people are affected by the rulers. The actions and behavior of a ruler and leader in society will influence people. This is a principle. People will look upon their leaders and rulers to act and will move in a way they have taken step into. Then, if a society is supposed to move towards God and in the way of God, then the rulers and leaders and every single aspect of their life, their behavior, attitudes, beliefs, worshiping, prayer, fasting, wearing style, family and lifestyle, honesty, trust, popularity, justice, all in all must be a symbol of Islam. The highest point of leadership refers to those perfect and outstanding individuals who are the total manifestation of Islam. All others must be measured based on this scale and norm.
اوج رهبری و امامت همان انسان‌های زبده تمام عیارند که تجلیگاه کامل اسلامند. همه دیگران را باید با اون مقیاس و معیار سنجید.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of The Teacher, which was about Shahid Ayatollah Beheshti. Until next time, we leave you in Allah's care. Goodbye.
Ya mazloom irtah, umr al-haq marah. Ya mazloom irtah, umr al-haq marah. Leek ya zalim yom, tishrab asah wajrah. Ya mazloom irtah. عمر الحق مراح ليك يا ظالم يوم تشرب أسى وجراح ياللي اتظلمت خلاص مستني ايه من ناس ده زمان ملوش أمان فيه الغلبان عليه ينداس ولا شكوى غير وانت معاه صبرك ده رب كبير عليم وبصير ولا بينسى
تومن یعنی Bazaar.
Whether man-made or not, food can have fascinating backstories. Products usually take a long journey before they end up on the dining table. Nevertheless, the food industry follows several golden rules that have helped it steadily grow over time. The most important of these is continuous product innovation and improved production processes to reduce costs and wastage. Others involve packaging and product accessibility, but probably the king of all rules is the taste that drives the food industry.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar, the weekly program that analyzes markets, profits, industries, and all sorts of things that connect us nationally and internationally. This week, we will be exploring the food industry and its related agricultural markets. We wanted to see how the food sector has expanded over the years and what companies are doing to increase their profits. So, let's check out the Tasty Grub.
To become more familiar with how much work goes into food production, we visited Golha Food Industries. It was established nearly a century ago, and its products are now a household name. It produces hundreds of items in seven categories, such as dried legumes and fruit, spices and canned products. It also takes great pride in its healthy product line, including gluten-free flour products. This producer has devoted a lot of attention to the packaging of its products. Due to its diverse product list, it purchases such materials as cans, plastic, and cardboard to design the appropriate type of storage systems for distribution. The company has a massive daily output due to its expansive production facilities. Most of the work is done by automated machines, but the fine details are handled by experienced staff. All production processes start when raw material enters the company. These materials are first tested for quality before hitting the production floors, most of which are domestically supplied. After being tested, the material is sent to various closed circuit machines for processing. Then it is time for sorting and more quality control tests before packaging.
Food production is a very sensitive process requiring many checks and controls that guarantee the final product is safe for consumption. And production machines play an essential role as they reduce errors and maintain constant output results. Plus, many of these machines have been domestically engineered, whereas they were previously imported at high prices.
This company has a highly equipped quality control and research and development lab. It's where many new products are created and food safety standards are controlled. Moreover, the staff in this department implement food sciences to make innovative products. It might be interesting to know that this department also has some of the best food tasters. This producer has been awarded Best Research and Development Department in Food Production for many consecutive years. Among its many achievements, it has also been awarded the certificate of favored brand by customers. This wouldn't be possible without adhering to strict national and international food safety and production management standards. Following such standards has helped it maintain its export share in the global food market. With years of experience, this company has grown such that it provides thousands of employment opportunities, both directly and indirectly. It also has thousands of agencies and stores all over the country. Plus, its products can also be purchased online. As part of its future vision, this company is looking to increase its market share both domestically and abroad. It also has long-term plans to increase production and improve the production process for efficiency.
The Iranian food industry has taken giant strides away from its traditional production methods. Industry participants say using food sciences and new technologies has helped the food industry grow faster than before. Never more than now has food been more accessible. In fact, it only requires a touch of a few buttons to receive it at home. Therefore, food packaging is a critical part of the production.
Over the last decade, there has been a great emphasis on developing packaging for the food industry. This is because Iran indigenized many machines needed to process and produce food items such as deli meats, beverages, pickles, and so much more. Proper packaging also increases shelf life, which is important for consumers. Previously, food items such as spices and dairy products were purchased bulk from customers abroad due to a lack of packaging. While exporting items in bulk has benefits, it's not as profitable as selling prepackaged foodstuff. So, in addition to adding value to raw products such as meat, companies have also designed attractive packaging to contain food in more manageable portions. Such a strategy increases not only product quality, but also food safety, which helps producers meet international export standards. This trend also helps companies with branding and has created job opportunities for designers.
As you probably already know, the food industry is heavily dependent on production in the agriculture sector. So it's no surprise that the agriculture sector holds the pulse of national food security and food exports. Plus, it is one of the only sectors that has been barely impacted by the US-imposed sanctions and the global coronavirus outbreak. That was horrible.
We looked at some figures from the Ministry of Agriculture to see how this sector is doing. Last year, around 6 million tons of agricultural and foodstuff products were exported. Trade of these products raked in roughly $4 billion. Pistachio, saffron, and confectionery products topped the export charts in value during that period. Other agriculture sectors, such as livestock, poultry, and aquaculture, have also generated millions of dollars in exports. Last year, nearly 450,000 tons of these items were sent to markets in neighboring regions worth $500 million. Agriculture accounts for 8% of the country's gross domestic product. It might be interesting to know that around half of Iran's total non-oil trade comes from this sector. That's all based on data from Iran's Ministry of Agriculture. According to Iran's Customs Administration, the total non-oil trade value rose nearly 40% last year. Over 120 million tons of non-oil products worth $72 billion were traded with other countries in that period. Meanwhile, the government has implemented measures to encourage the development of agriculture. One trend this sector is witnessing is the application of smart technologies for the cultivation and harvest of various products. There has also been a boom in developing greenhouses and green practices to preserve natural resources. The word plastic was initially used to describe pliable and easily shaped objects. However, it only recently became a name for a category of materials called polymers. Such materials are abundant in nature. Take cellulose, for example. It's the material that makes up the cell walls of plants. However, synthetic polymers are a more recent invention of the last 150 years. These come from the plentiful carbon atoms found in fossil fuels. Since then, they have become an integral part of the industry, technology, and even various sciences.
We will explore Iran's plastic and polymer productions. We will also check out some of its downstream markets and their contributions to the national economy. These days, we use more plastic than ever before. It's terrible. So where does this material come from? And what goes into making this stuff? Let's find out.
Our quest for answers led us to a company specializing in making various polymer products. Parsa Polymer Sharif was established some 20 years ago and is a knowledge-based company that was born in the research department of the University of Sharif. As a leading advanced polymer compound manufacturer, it makes various products essential to everyday living. It produces compounds based on commodity thermoplastic resins like PP, PE, and the famous PET, or PET. It also engineers resins like PVC and so much more. This knowledge-based company is a major supplier of raw materials to many industries. Some include original equipment manufacturers in the automotive market and PVC pipe producers in the construction industry. Over the years, this company has helped Iran save millions on products that would otherwise be imported. This firm has three main functions: research and development, innovation center, and production. It also has a brand new line for researching and producing biodegradable polymers for the packaging industry. Most of the raw materials needed for production are domestically purchased. When this stuff enters the company, it is first tested and graded based on its quality. Then, according to its intended use, the raw material is formulated and sent to machines for production.
Machines used in the polymer industry utilizes some of the most advanced machinery for production. The extruder is one of the most commonly used machines. They play a central role in plastic production. Extruder lines are the largest converters of plastics worldwide. Some of these machines can be domestically manufactured while others are still imported.
Its products are all tested in its well-equipped research and development lab. The various granules and resin compounds undergo over a dozen tests while being analyzed for quality here. Also, new product formulas are created in this highly technical research and development department. Through these facilities, the company is expanding its product portfolio. Products made here are produced along the lines of exports. So, national and international quality standards are implemented during the production processes. This means the quality of products found here doesn't just match international standards, they go beyond the quality of competing foreign brands in the international arena. The headquarters of this company is located in Sharif University Advanced Technologies Incubator. Owing to this, it has strong relations and collaborations with the scientific community. It has also been awarded for its contributions to the scientific and industrial sectors over the past years. This knowledge-based company also exports its products. The company has a unique future vision strongly intertwined with sustainable business development. This is partly due to its forward thinking and social and environmental responsibility outlook.
Given its large oil reserves, it's not surprising that Iran has an ever-expanding polymer industry. Various manufacturing sectors heavily depend on petrochemical products such as home appliances, plastics, and even textiles. The government aims to further develop polymer industries and other downstream sectors of the oil industry. Doing so would increase revenues through exports and help bolster the country's economy.
According to the National Polymer and Petrochemical Institute, Iran ranks first in the region and globally ranks 18th in polymer production. Moreover, output in this sector accounts for over 2% of the country's non-oil exports. We looked at some figures from the National Association of Polymer and Plastic Industries to get an idea of how this market is doing. Well over 6 million tons of polymer products are domestically produced each year. Half of this amount is domestically used, and the other half is exported, valued at $3 billion. In addition, Exports of products made from polymers in complementary industries are worth around $2 billion. However, industry participants say that the country is not using all of its production capacity. Figures from the National Association of Polymer and Plastic Industries show this sector has a production capacity of 20 million tons, meaning around 14 million tons of this total production potential are not being used. The government plans to double current production levels over the next 4 years to increase exports. Officials say meeting this goal will make Iran self-sufficient in polymer production.
Now, polymers are the primary materials that build many other products. Plastic items have different polymer formulations depending on their application. The majority of polymers made in Iran are domestically consumed. Some of its biggest customers are in the construction sector. Also, plastic is extensively used in the medical industry and transportation.
Almost everything around us is either made of plastic or has some plastic component. Moreover, plastic has played a central role in the development of the medical industry over the past 60 years. These materials are used to create hemodialysis machines, disposable needles, IV drips, and testing equipment vital to modern medicine. Plastics have also had a considerable impact on developing high-quality prosthetics. The National Medical Device Directorate estimates that Iran's share in the global medical device market will reach well over $7 billion in the next 3 years. PVC materials are also largely used in Iran's construction industry. For example, Iran's Doors and Windows Manufacturers Association estimates the domestic demand for PVC doors and windows is around 35,000 tons annually. This is partly due to the current residential construction boom in the country. The home appliance industry is also another mammoth customer of the polymer industry. Based on figures from the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade, Iran has doubled its production in this sector over the last 3 years. In 2021, around 15 million home appliance units were produced, with exports soaring to roughly $140 million. So, polymer production is key in expanding many manufacturing industries, which have raked in large amounts of foreign revenue for the country.
Well, I believe it is that time of the show where I should take a little break and pass the action over to my good friend and colleague out there on the field. Take it away.
Despite all the advancements in technology and the problems it has solved, food security is one it hasn't. In fact, it is becoming more and more of an issue beyond the countries that have always been grappling with it. One solution is to, well, end inflation and the global economic crisis, but that's hardly a solution. There's no end in sight with that. But another way is to use technology to make things more efficient. We wouldn't be needing more land because we're not getting it thanks to desertification of more and more land. We also wouldn't be needing more water because we're also not getting it, also thanks to desertification. We would actually need less of both if only we could manage our resources better.
Iran has some potential for farming and agriculture, and that's a massive understatement if you've ever heard one. But we could definitely do with some improvements, some innovations in the field, especially with irrigation, because, well, we've been experiencing some drought and some water shortages a little bit more than what climate change would warrant. And that's why we're here to check out a smart greenhouse that believes has the answer, that the shakeup that the industry needs to be a lot more efficient, especially with water, plus some extra goodies. So stay tuned to this episode of The Bazaar to check out what they've been able to come up with.